With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hauser on politics in the state. Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate Majority Leader, saying to the president, I hope you sign the bill to avoid the shutdown. Let's see what the president does. He is, as we've reported, as CBS has been reporting all day, he's not too happy about it. Seems like the leaning is right now that he's going to sign it, declare the national emergency, and come up with funds elsewhere. But some of the reports on where those funds are coming from, including California after that relief, Puerto Rico after that relief. Let's see how the Republican Party and those who are willing to be objective handle that part of it. And then how long of a court battle we're going to see and whether we want this as the precedent. Even if you agree 100% with the president, by the way, on the record, I think we should have a wall in parts of our border. Absolutely. I don't agree with Nancy Pelosi at all when she says it's immoral. Immoral, that would mean taking down all of the walls, all of the barriers on the border. But I think we trust the experts, whether it's new technology, whether it's drones, whether it's numbers. And just the classic distortion, again, on where the drugs come from when so much of the information from the president's own people. Talk about the drugs coming in from regulated ports of entry. But to act like this isn't a problem is naive. To act like Democrats haven't voted for it before is absurd. But it's just an example of one side is so polarized, the Democrats and the energy in the left and pushing. And then the president, come on, let's not forget what this is about. Certainly, I don't doubt that he wants the country to be safe. I never would question that. I disagree with the man in so many ways. I don't question whether he wants the country to be safe. This is all about his campaign in 2020. Promises made, promises kept. He wants to go through the checklist. He feels like he has a great deal to point out, but this was the signature issue. This is what allowed him to stand out among Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, Chris Christie, Carly Fiorina, all of them coming down the escalator on the wall. I think it's also telling what it tells you about the Republicans, not the Democrats in this case, Republicans who are willing to sign off on $1.375 billion in walls or barriers. What does it tell you about the Senate and the House that the Republicans in the main and where they stand on the border? Because I think what it tells you is, yes, they believe in parts that it should take place, but there are many other areas where there are better ideas and better ways to protect the southern border. Hauser in moments, Laura Oakes right now. All right, plenty to discuss with our guy, Tom Hauser. We haven't talked to Tom in a while. We'll kind of peel back the curtain here a little bit. Tom is demanding $10,000 in appearance. He is getting $5,000 up front, and then Lindsay will evaluate his performance to decide if he gets $5,000, maybe even $10,000. So, I mean, you better bring it.
If you're giving me $5,000 just to answer the phone, that's good enough for me.
That'd be good. You'll skip the rest. All right, good to chat with you. Okay, so let's talk Klobuchar first, and let's talk the story about difficult to work for. I know two of us grabbing a beer have discussed this before. I know many other people who I talked to in the Politico circle had talked about this before. Do you feel like in town it received the appropriate amount of conversation? And do you think now the national coverage is at the right amount, considering the country is getting to know her a little bit more at this point?
So when you're talking about Minnesota or local, you mean over the course of her tenure in the Senate?
Yeah, right.
You know, I think it's had the required amount. I mean, how much do you cover a boss who's mean to you? I mean, it's happened in places where I've worked. It's, I'm sure, happened in places where you've worked. I don't think it's risen to the level of criminal activity. I mean, that somebody's a tough boss. It's been pretty common knowledge here. There have been stories about it. I don't know if you recall, after everybody starts saying in Minnesota, why is this the first we're hearing of this? I look back in our archives, and the first time I saw mention of it was 13 years ago, this month, when she was running for the U.S. Senate for the first time, and members of her staff in the Hennepin County Attorney's Office were asking AFSCME, one of the big labor unions, to take back their endorsement of her because she created a hostile work environment and mistreated staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were stories going back all the way to 2006. Fast forward to about a year ago, Politico did a story on the worst bosses in Congress and highlighted, in fact, that was the exact headline of it, and it showed in the Senate she had the highest annual staff turnover, and talked about one of the reasons for that was, she was, tough and demanding and et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, and that was, again, before her latest reelection.
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked about it on my show on At Issue. I didn't go out and do a story on how people out in Washington are being treated. I I've heard stories. I know a lot of people work on Capitol Hill. I've heard all kinds of horror stories, if you want to call them that, about how difficult the hours are and the workload and how, you deal with a lot of egos out in Washington, D.C. It was really, to me, a lot of inside baseball.
So let's go forward. As someone who's interviewed her many times, as someone who's followed her closely, and now you're going to watch and see how this plays, let's say for the next 8-9 months, leading up to trying to get traction and trying to build up ahead of Iowa and New Hampshire quickly after it. What will be, in your view, her greatest assets, and what will be her greatest challenges?
Well, first of all, a week from now or less, nobody will be talking about the staff mistreatment.
Yeah. Unless another part comes up or unless some names come out, right?
Yes, if people would, and then, people have emailed me and been critical saying, well, how can you expect staff people to reveal their names? They'll never be able to work again. And I'm going, well, that's part of the deal. If you want to throw somebody under the bus, at some point, you've got to take responsibility and put your name on it so that it can be verified. And if you're not willing to do that, then I guess just move on, take another job, or unless there's some kind of criminal activity, some kind of, harassment that meets
mm-hmm.
legal thresholds. I mean, it's just it was remarkable to me how that story, the only reason that story took on the life that it did was because she was about to announce she's running for president. And, you look at the man who currently occupies the White House and,
he's had no turnover.
He has turnover at the highest levels all of the time. Very demanding, very mercurial. It's part of what goes with people in these positions. You have a lot of egos. You have people who are very high achievers, and they're very demanding, and maybe inappropriately demanding. But it's the way it is. So I was surprised by the legs that this got, even nationally. Any of the reporters doing the stories could have Googled Amy Klobuchar and staff and seen all the stories that have been done over the years and realized this is not new, that she's demanding.
Okay,
why,
so how
why
about
they didn't do that, I don't know. But back to your question.
Yeah.
So looking forward, what's her greatest asset and what is her greatest liability? Was that?
Mm-hmm. That's it. Yep.
Well, you know, she has a great ability to latch on to issues or stories that really resonate with a lot of people. They may not be the big macro issues like tax policy or healthcare necessarily, although she's been very out front on the prescription drug prices thing. She really focuses on issues that impact people in very personal ways. Again, prescription drugs is one of those areas. There's consumer issues, like I'm sure you remember the tragic story about the little girl who was,
yep,
you know, sucked into a pool drain and drowned. Senator,
yeah,
Klobuchar latched onto that issue, made sure legislation was passed that changes some of the rules around that. People will say, you know, she's pandering to, you know, an obvious issue. And some of that may be true, but it's been very effective for her. I mean, she has won by wide margins now, 3 elections in a row in Minnesota. Her biggest liability kind of goes along the lines of this. While she has passed many pieces of legislation, there are no major, you know, landmark pieces of legislation that, you know, she can point to. Part of the reason is she has served several years in the minority in the U.S. Senate, where your ability to do things like that are very limited. So, you know, she did get to make a name for herself on the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, and I think people will look at that and say, you know, she was tough there on somebody who was trying to get confirmed to the Supreme Court. And so, you know, people will look at her and go, you know, she's pretty tough. But the problem she's going to have in the early going, trying to win the nomination, is that she is not liberal enough in,
mm-hmm,
the eyes of,
yep,
many Democratic voters, the ones who tend to be voting in recent elections. The party has clearly drifted pretty well to the left.
How about money? Raising it. Money's huge amounts.
Money's going to be a big problem just because she's, I think there was a list of, you know, how they're doing on the individual fundraising. She ranked way down the list. Now, granted, she's only been in the race for a couple of days.
Yeah, right.
You know, she's running against people who are from much bigger states, who are much bigger names, much better known. So she's going to have to do this from the grassroots, which in some cases can be very effective.
Yeah, might be better for her. Okay.
Yes, because some people look at the big money and that's all they think about, and then they dismiss it because there's too much money.
Let's pause right here. Mr. Hauser, Tom Hauser from Channel 5 with us. We come back, we'll talk about Representative Omar, and then let's talk St. Paul. Another confab yesterday with all the top legislative brain wizards and saying, we're going to get together, we're going to make things different this year, we're going to get things done. Does Tom really think that's going to take place? Back with Hauser in moments on CCO. Channel 5's political guru, political czar, their know-it-all, Tom Hauser, is nice enough to join us. Representative Omar, I called her out, so did many. Did it surprise you at all? This is the response to, first, Kevin McCarthy's comments about Representative Omar and another congresswoman with her comments about Israel, Palestinians, then Glenn Greenwald from The Intercept, when he talked about the First Amendment, and then when Representative Omar followed up with, it's all about the Benjamins, which it was from a ditty, a tune from 20 years ago, but to a lot of us, it played up to a long-held and insulting religious stereotypes of those of the Jewish faith. She stepped in it before, in my view, going back to the 2012 tweet about Israel hypnotized. I thought her comments about Lindsey Graham a few weeks before, Tom, were also insulting. Now you have the president, and as I said earlier before you came on, of all people, the president, lecturing people on where the line is on inappropriate comments. I was chuckling about that. But the president is calling for her to step down and resign. That's obviously not going to happen. But if she's hurt in any way by this, How will we see it?
You know, it's very difficult to see how you would see it unless she, there's been several, at least Republicans, calling for her to be taken off the, what is it, the Foreign Relations
yes,
Committee.
Yes, right.
That might be the most tangible way you'd see it, because she certainly is not going to be recalled from office, and she almost certainly will win by a huge margin in the next elections.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of that district, and she... I want to make sure that's not misconstrued to say that they're all anti-Semitic. I just mean if you're a Democrat and you have that seat, it's very, very difficult to do anything to lose the job.
Just like in hundreds of other districts all across the country.
Yes.
Some
Republican districts as well. Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Well, you saw years ago when Michelle Bachmann would make some controversial statements, maybe not quite as controversial as these, but, you know,
close.
Her margin of victory narrowed, but she was never seriously challenged.
Look at Steve King in Iowa.
Absolutely.
I mean, the comments he makes. And finally, this last time, after it's been comment after comment after comment, that some of the Washington, D.C. Republicans have moved on rather strongly and took him off that same committee. But it seems like so far he's still very popular down in Iowa in his district.
Yeah, and we should clarify that. I worked in Iowa for a number of years. He's popular in that district.
In that district.
I do not believe he is popular
you're right.
Statewide, which, you know, you could make the same case about Omar. But when you're in Congress, you're not running statewide. You're running
right.
to represent the people in your district. And I think so far they've been willing to give her a pass on all the other controversial things she has said. And now she has apologized for this latest one, but you don't know what's coming next. And I think now they're going to be keeping the leadership in Congress, the Democratic leadership in the House, will be keeping a close eye on her, because she was, I mean, it was very rare to see the public rebuke she got from the Speaker of the House of her own party.
Quickly.
Yeah, yes, and it included all of the leadership of the party in the House. And then also, I'm looking at a statement that Representative Dean Phillips, another newly elected Democratic
yep.
congressman from Minnesota, who strongly for this. You've got members of the Minnesota legislature, Senator Ron Latz, Representative Ryan Winkler,
mm-hmm.
who have gone after Senator Paul Gazelka, a Republican. Again, not surprisingly that he would go after, but it's coming from all quarters now. But how you will see it play out for her, unless she gets stripped of a committee assignment or something along those lines, I don't think you'll see any difference.
See, I'm with you 100%. You know, and she said, I unequivocally apologize. And I don't even have a problem with the other part where she talked about the power of lobbyists. That's all fine. But the earlier part of that statement, Tom, where she said, well, I'm still learning and wasn't aware of this. Come on now. Representative Omar is a very smart, accomplished person. As someone who's faced stereotypes herself endlessly and has faced a conversation about where she stands on the U.S. policy towards Israel, to act like she wasn't aware of this stereotype about Jews, I don't accept that at all.
I talked to a Democrat who is very active in the Democratic Party yesterday, who stopped me in the hall and was rolling his eyes about these latest comments. But he said, this goes back to long before she was elected to Congress, when she was active in the race, when you remember when Phyllis Kahn was upset?
Yes.
And some comments and things that she had said about Phyllis Kahn.
Yeah, you're right.
Back at the time. And he said it should have been controversial then, but she wasn't running for Congress at the time. She later became a state legislative candidate herself. But he just said that this is not new, and within the party, they've been aware of this. But there's very little you can do, because she's been elected by a considerable margin in her district, and in all likelihood will be reelected in 2020.
100%. Okay, St. Paul. You know, it's Governor Walz is saying, I'm going to get along. Hortman is saying, I'm going to get along. Gazelka is saying, I'm going to get along. Are we going to see significant policy changes. There are the two of us can be talking multiple times when there's 2 days left, when there's a day left, and they're going to be trying to cram down all these bills in a short period of time once again.
Less than 24 hours after that news conference yesterday where they were all but singing Kumbaya.
Yeah.
Let me read a couple of quotes from Republicans that I just logged a moment ago about the Enbridge pipeline.
Yes.
That the governor has announced he is going to continue an appeal of. And Senator Paul Gazelka, who stood right next to the governor yesterday and talked about how they were going to get along, he said, Walz and Flanagan are the only ones left in the state who need clarity on this project. It has met every test. There's a lot of people that are very upset that this process is continuing to delay and delay and delay, and I'm always going to be looking for a win-win with the governor. This is a lose-lose. And then you've got Kurt Dowd, the House Minority Leader, saying this was Governor Walz's first test on what One Minnesota means, and in this example, I think very clearly Governor Walz has failed the test. He has decided to side with extreme environmentalists.
Is this any different
from
what?
How well they're getting together?
Yeah, they're tight. They're close. Is this any different from what Tim Walz said on the campaign trail?
No, he was you know, wishy washy on it.
Yeah,
and you know, so
which he was on a few topics. Right, there were a few times you had multiple debates with him. I did a debate with him. I interviewed him, not as many times as you did, but many times. And very likable guy, but sometimes gives you a 3-minute answer, and you're like, okay, did you answer the specific question, though?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And and this was one of those issues. He waited right up until the deadline. Today was the deadline. He had to decide whether to continue with this appeal, and he decided to do it. And it's, you know, where it goes from here, he says, well, look, we just need more clarity. I mean, the Public Utilities Commission has already given it, a permit to go ahead. It needs other permits as well, but what this is primarily going to do is likely delay the inevitable. But it does help him with the environmental wing of his party, and Republicans are saying he's essentially, it's not One Minnesota, he is, you know, essentially kowtowing to the left.
The distracted driving bill, will it pass?
I do believe it will this year. I think the time has finally come that is going to pass, and it is always stalled at the very last minute because there's, you know, been a few libertarian Republicans with a libertarian streak who don't want another freedom taken away, but I think even they've finally been worn down by all the people who've been up here testifying about losing loved ones to distracted driving, and I think this is the year, and I think it might happen sooner in the session rather than later.
Okay, let me look at Lindsay now, because just to remind folks, Tom agreed to come on the air for $5,000 guaranteed, and then Lindsay would decide if he would get the next $5,000, maybe more.
Of course he does.
But before she makes that decision, I wanted to say one more thing about the Kumbaya moment
yesterday. Can you sing that for us a little bit, just to give us a little feel?
No, I will not. Okay. I refuse to do that, to sing on the radio or anywhere
Kumbaya.
Else. So you remember House Speaker Steve Swigum?
Oh, yeah.
He tried something like this many years ago where everything was going to be transparent. They were going to hold budget hearings and meetings, the private behind-closed-door negotiations.
Yeah.
They said, screw that. We're going to do it out in the open. That lasted like 20 minutes. And then everybody started grandstanding.
Yeah.
They got less done than they would behind closed doors. I got a feeling this is going to end up the same way.
Okay,
that's the last thing I got to say about
it. I just caught Lindsay just shaking her head. Hold on. Lindsay's just now telling me in a note, take away the entire $10,000. Because you ended on a negative note. So, I mean, you had $10,000.
I just got to be Pollyannish, and then I get 10 grand.
Oh, yeah. You know this show. That's what we play to. Pollyannish. And the glass is always full. That's pretty much my calling card. All right, sir. We'll see each other soon. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Good talking to you, Chad.
Check out Mr. Hauser on a regular basis. He is tremendous at what he does. Channel 5, 45, and also follow him on Twitter, at Tom Hauser. All right, we're going to finish with a serious one. I first saw this on the trip today, but it's elsewhere. A 61-year-old Eden Prairie man will serve 90 days in the county workhouse for helping his ailing wife kill herself. Thomas Hope pleaded guilty Friday in the Hennepin County District Court and was immediately sentenced in connection with the asphyxiation death in August of, again, his ex-wife. Houck's felony sentence also includes 3 years probation, 90 days community service, and a fine of a little over $1,000. One of the reasons for this lower sentence from where what is recommended from Earl Grey, freaking guest of this show, is the mother of his wife sent a letter to the court in support of Thomas. The statute calls for up to 15 years in prison upon conviction. Houck called 911 during the night, August 16th. Told the dispatcher he was awake in the middle of the night to find his wife had euthanized herself. When police arrived at the home, they found Conrad dead, Linda Conrad, and a handwritten note nearby. It said she cannot endure any more pain in any way out of the pain. Neighbors reported not seeing Conrad leave the home in the years since she was severely injured in a car accident. She's had medical problems ever since she was a child, chronic migraines, severe stomach pain, allergies, depression until the end. Tim Conrad married her and Ace having remained a close friend since their divorce. She basically went for 3 weeks without a meal. It was snowballing. Doctors wouldn't give her any pain and medication because of the opioid crisis. So I just want to clarify something. Conrad was the one who married her in 87 and remained a close friend since the divorce. Houck was married to her at the time. So that is my mistake. Okay. Houck admitted to helping his wife research various suicide methods and assisted her as she took her life. On the day before the death, Houck and Conrad went to a store and bought supplies and then disregarded the receipts. After Houck assisted Conrad in the act, he checked for a pulse, found none, after Houck drove to a nearby store and threw away the gloves he used. He called 911 several hours later. Okay? So that's this premise on this story. But the bigger issue is, and it's come up many times in our country, and we've had cases where it's drawn more attention. Think about during the run for Dr. Jack Kevorkian. Think about, was it Emily? Was it Manyard? Was that the young woman who had, you know, great life? And then she had a debilitating illness and how they moved to find a place where this was allowed. And I get it is not easy to come up with the precise wording and the concerns about abuse and the concerns about hypothetically what we think when maybe we're writing this down about what could happen, what should happen, and we're 25 years old or we're 55 years old. And maybe we're in that position later in life and it would be a different view. I still don't understand in our society how if people, when they are of a sound mind and there is a sound law passed with multiple doctors affirming a diagnosis, how the better route, whether it's this example here in Minnesota or take your pick of other examples, we're going to say, nope, we're just going to load you up on meds. And maybe you're at a point where it only slightly alleviates the pain. Maybe you're at a point where it has very little effect, but you need to deal with this agony for who knows how long. Is it weeks? Is it months? Is it years? And I get some people say in a civilized, caring society, why would we do this? Why would we aid an individual to end their life? And others have said, guess what? Really behind the scenes, examples like this are taking place. But it's in a way where it doesn't skirt the law, but it handles it in a way with doctors and patients being involved. And others can be in that group too saying, no way, this never should happen. You can't end someone's life. I don't want to see people go through hell. I just don't. I don't want to see people have these illnesses, right? That's not exactly a hot take. Wow, how counter is that? But we can sit here and we can use medical services and medicine and doctors and brilliance of all these people for years and years. But then if the unthinkable happens, whether it's an accident, whether it's something you're born with, whether it's something you develop, and multiple doctors are telling you, you are not going to recover. And you're now at a point where it's not only you're not going to recover, but you're going to deal with extraordinary pain. And you're going to deal with it often on a regular basis. And we have to draw the line and say, no, we're not going to help people out. That doesn't add up to me. And as I said earlier in this conversation, I know it's not easy to draw these laws to make sure, most importantly, that abuse is not taking place where you're ending someone's life early, where there's somebody who's manipulating this situation for whatever reason. But all countries, including ours, we deal with difficult, untenable, sometimes almost impossible situations for the greater good of the individuals or the country itself. And for the people who have watched their loved ones, a wife, a husband, a son, a daughter, a best friend, whomever it might be, go through this. Hear their stories. Because it is a lot easier to sit off to the side and say, this never should happen, when you haven't watched with your own eyes. And I also understand that there are times when doctors aren't perfect. And they are, let's go with the cliche, practicing medicine. And that's another area. But I'm sorry if this is me, and I think quite a few people. And the option is I'm going to lay in a bed and feel pain that I never could have imagined for weeks, months, or years, or I can end my life. And I made the sound decision to do that. Whether I believe in the afterlife or not, I should be allowed to make that decision. Let's pause here. I want to get Lindsay's thoughts on this. I want to see what you have to think. The basic premise is, should we allow people, not where you're just going to the hardware store or the convenience store or the pharmacy and you're doing this on your own, can we set up a society where laws are passed across this country, not state by state, but across the country, where we can treat people with the dignity which they deserve? Because I believe we should do that. And we should do it everywhere. And we shouldn't have people just moving to states where it's allowed. It's 250. That is your Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to call us for free home improvement estimates on windows and insulation. What do you think? Do you agree with part of what I said? You adamantly disagree with what I said? You want to provide a different perspective? You can call me at 651-989-9226 or text away 81807. It's been 24 hours, I need more. Okay, one comment, reacting to a text. Again, you send text, I react to him, or Lindsay reacts to him, or Adam reacts to him. God works in mysterious ways. One should avoid taking his place. You know what I would say to you then? You know, don't drive a car. Don't try modern medicine. Don't try any advancements then. Because if God just works that way, there's no need to rely on the professionals, the skill, the talent. I detest God's plan. Okay? I believe in God. Let me be clear about that. Okay? But this idea that we're just pawns and we're chess pieces and that we're just moving through life at however God has decided to tell us, tell it out to all the people who lose a parent or a child or a best friend or have cancer, who have illnesses. I don't believe that God has decided to do that. So I think it's pretty interesting on this particular area where people say, you can have medication, you can have doctors, you can have expertise, but in this case, don't get involved with God's plan. Lindsay, what do you think?
I hope that by the time I'm in that place that the laws and the stigma around it have changed. I've talked multiple times about, you know, my father had a heart attack at home and died the exact way he would want to. It was quick. It was cheap. There was no fuss. Do I wish he was here today? Absolutely. Sure. Abso-frickin-lutely. But am I happy that he didn't suffer and that he wasn't put in a home or on a ton of drugs? I thank my lucky stars every day. And I know that I am I'm the rarity. Like, it's way more common.
Right. You're the exception.
I'm the exception to the rule. Yep. Like, it's way more common to watch someone you love suffer and
at times for a long time.
I hope it changes.
Yep. Erickson Blaine. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, real quick. I've seen animals euthanized and how peaceful and easy it is. And you got to remember, at what point when you're talking about end of life, are you staying alive for your purposes, or is somebody else saying that you need to stay alive? When you're talking about a dog or a cat, you make the decision that they're being gone and ending the suffering is much more important than you know, staying around.
Thank you. Lindsay, we out at 35? 50. Okay, let's try to get Janine in, who is not lucky enough to live in Golden Valley, so she has to settle for Crystal. Go ahead, Janine.
Hi.
I'm kidding you just because I'm a Golden Valley native.
I'm a retired nurse, and I've seen a lot in my life. And I have also put down 5 dogs. And I remember one in particular looked at me with the sad eyes, like, won't you do something like I've seen patients do?
Thank you, Janine. I appreciate that. I'm with her. This is suicide. People don't value life anymore. For people all ages. Yes, they do. They value the life and do not want to see a loved one go through hell. To me, not valuing life is just leaving you there withering in that way. God alone controls life. Well, then just lead it exactly the way God does and don't use any modern advancements. I don't agree at all.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.